So the Spec Series, actually, it kind of started back in the day when we started, we did Pro 7, where it was first gen RX 7s.
Okay.
And back in the day, people raced, you know, they were racing. If they wanted cheap racing, you would race your 240Z or 510 or, you know, whatever, BMW 2002 and stuff. And the Pro 7 got really popular because it was fairly cheap to build. And that was the secret.
Yeah.
It's like, it's cheap. Unfortunately, with spec classes, it's supposed to be cheap, but it never becomes like that.
Right.
Because when it becomes really competitive, then people actually spend way more money trying to get 1/10 of a horsepower.
Yeah.
You know, in Spec Miata, like a bunch of guys got disqualified or something. They were just doing crazy stuff like draining their transmission fluid and running one lap qualifying with no fluid and stuff like that.
Which is nuts.
Yeah. And so that got to be expensive. And the Spec Miata engine's costing $10,000-$15,000 for Spec Miata motor.
Right.
Because you needed two more horsepower.
Right.
So then I think with Spec E46, they changed it a little bit where they put a maximum horsepower cap. So then they actually dynoed you.
Okay.
And so you didn't have to do that. But the idea is that, yeah, it's cheaper, it's more affordable, and it's easier to build. So it's more popular for the average guy.
Right. So now, when you look at some of these classes, I see the hard part that I think I have with some of the spec series, and I think for somebody that's looking at racing from an outside point of view that doesn't have an active participation in some of these things, is that there's a lot of, when you hear spec series, and I think when I think about the MX-5 Cup series, right? Some of those cars are a grip of money that you have to buy. They're turnkey.
Yes.
But that's a large expense, and the average everyday driver can't roll into that car.
Right.
And I think this is a good example, right? Obviously,
well,
SRO
this
is a very
expensive spec series.
Right. Obviously, SRO is not your average everyday series.
Right.
Same thing with IMSA or anything like that. But, you know, when we look at these programs, they're obviously hopefully done in a way that it gives you a turnkey car, not only to make sure everything's competitive and on a similar level, but also so that somebody can come into a series and be well-equipped to run. They're really bringing the driver that's supposed to showcase their program.
Right.
Do you think that some of these spec series are a good thing, or are they harder for maybe people to enter into racing from the idea of being able to campaign whatever car they want?
Well, it certainly makes it easier because you don't have to set up the car and everything. Set up, the basic stuff is done for you. So in that sense, it's easier. It's harder because now you have less... For me, I like the creativity and the engineering side.
I don't
like the spec side of it because I want to be able to make stuff.
I want to be able to fabricate things and make it work for me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I don't like the fact that, you mean I have to run... I want to run bigger brakes. Why can't I run bigger brakes or whatever? But then the nice thing about these kind of stuff in, GT3, GT4 is that they're high-end enough and they're professionally built and tested. TCR was a great thing.
Yeah.
Because the cars were fantastic to begin with. You just put gas in it and go.
Right.
But then you have the professional spec series, and then you have the amateur spec ones where you build it in your garage.
Right.
And then that makes it easier because you can build a car yourself.
Yeah.
But then there's not much tweaking. The hard part is when the cars are really close to each other, like in Spec Miata, then you have a lot of crashes.
Yeah. Right.
So that makes it a lot more expensive.
Right.
Because if at 1 second separates first from 10th or 15th, then you're gonna, if you see an opening, you gotta go for it.
Right.
And half the time you don't make it and push the guy out.
right out the door.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me. I think that I don't know how you feel, because when I think about some of these cars, some of these builds, I think about the earlier years where we came up with EK Civics and different things like that. And then, now it seems like there's a large progression into some of the spec classes with BMW. I've heard from a lot of drifters and from a lot of road racers just how good from a base physics standpoint the chassis are. Do you feel that way? I know that you're kind of just starting to play with some of that BMW stuff on your end. You haven't had experience before, because you guys have been running BMWs on the GoGo Kids team for a long time.
They're very popular cars because they drive fantastic. I started in the Hondas.
Well, yeah.
And I love the Honda stuff. I love front wheel drive, but I'm the minority. Most people hate front wheel drive.
right.
But I think those guys don't know what they're missing.
Right.
Because if you don't know what you're doing, then yes, it's not as much fun. But once you know what you're doing, then it's a blast. Yeah. But the BMW stuff, everybody likes it. But then there are negative sides with running German cars because
right,
it gets very more expensive.
Obvious. If you've ever owned a German car, you know that you know it seems to have a lot of nuances that seem to bite you in the ass.
Yes, and you know, my whole family has BMWs, and I don't.
Right.
Because I prefer my Asian cars too.
Right. Because I can work on them, fix them, and then they run again.
Yeah. And I don't even have to work on them.
Right.
I put gas in it, I change the oil, and it keeps going.
Right. That's right.
But I do know the popularity of BMW chassis. And so we for the 25, we're starting this new class.
Right.
So we have the car outside here. And so it's an E90 chassis car. And those cars are becoming really cheap and affordable to buy.
Right.
You can pick up a car for $2,000 that runs and runs great.
Right.
So, like, pick up one of those. You can turn it into a car that will cost you, you know, $20,000 to run it up front.
Right.
And it's not exactly a spec class, but it's a
spec-ish
class.
Right.
So there are certain things you have to run, but then we still want to have you be creative and make your own stuff.
So it allows you to bring kind of that engineering back into it while without getting crazy.
Right.
Because we're kind of streamlining what you can and can't do.
Correct.
But we're also trying to equalize the field by kind of staying to one platform, one car, one setup.
Yeah.
Is this, what kind of things, like from this class that you guys are developing, what kind of things are going to be the... Here's the things we kind of need to adhere to.
Yeah.
Where's the lines get drawn with that class?
So we try to get rid of anything expensive, basically.
Okay.
So, like, the shocks are the most expensive part of the car. So in this case, we're mandated that you run the cheapest, good quality shock possible.
Okay.
Which we found was the JRZ entry level RS1.
Okay.
So, because, you know, shocks, you can spend $10,000 on shocks easily for a car, so that's nothing. But these things are fairly inexpensive, but they're still a race quality that'll keep up.
Right.
Wheels, you can spend $10,000 on wheels.
Absolutely.
Easily.
Yeah.
So it's like, no wheels, no. You can got to run the Koenigs, or that's it. Like, that's the best you can get.
Yeah.
So engines, stock. So you can just do bolt-on stuff.
Okay.
You can't do anything inside, and we do
so
it horsepower.
When you say bolt-on stuff with the engine, are we talking about, like, we could do anything bolt-on?
No.
Okay.
You even have to run the stock airbox.
Okay.
You have to run. You can run like an eBay header.
Okay.
And you can do the BMW 330 three-stage intake manifold, which gives you another like 10 horsepower. But the idea was my concept was as much possible parts as you can get from pick and pull.
All right. So I guess the question I have, when I start to think E90, I also think that there's the 335 car. Can you run the 335 car?
No.
So
no.
When we say E90?
328.
Okay.
328.
So it's, that's where we're at.
N52, 328.
Okay, so we're basically saying this is the engine.
Yes.
Right, okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a little off of my BMW knowledge, so stay with me for a second.
Yeah.
Didn't they offer X-Drive cars and that same thing? Can you run either one?
No.
It has to be the rear-wheel drive car.
Rear drive?
Okay.
You can run automatic if you want.
Okay. That's interesting.
But the 6-speed automatic, which came in that car, because the later cars get 8-speed, but that's the second, that's the next generation F-body. So, you run the stock automatic if you want, which we're going to test, actually, because I'm wondering, it could be pretty good.
Yeah,
because that's right around there is when the transmissions automatics became really good.
Okay.
And one thing we're allowing is you can run a 2-door, 4-door, or the wagon.
Okay.
But no convertible.
Oh, well, that makes sense. So now, what about on the tuning side of things? Mm-hmm. We talked about keeping the stock engine.
Yeah.
Can they have a stock tune, or is it stock computer only?
The tune is something we're still working on.
Okay.
We're still testing that because tunes can get really expensive or can be cheap. So we have to be careful because the hard part for us is policing it, what they have. So it's got to be something that we can check to make sure that you have this tune in your car. So that's one thing we need to do. But the goal is to make it affordable.
Okay.
So
you're thinking about staying stock ECU type thing?
Stockish,
yeah.
Definitely stock ECU. But whether you can reflash it or not, that's the key.
Right. It's hard because, like, in those years, especially with the European stuff, they've been flashing forever. It's not like, you know, not that we didn't flash cars back in, you know, doing a lot of the import cars, but... It's like flashing really was founded in that European type thing, you know, from the Volkswagen stuff all the way up.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, even flashing, it, you know, the software and some of this open source software that's out there, it's really good, and it allows you to mess with a ridiculous amount of compensation tables. And by the time you got to E90, there probably would have been a tremendous amount of data in that ECU that if you could access it, you really could do some pretty intricate stuff. So how do you put a hold on that? Do you just say, I guess that's what you're saying, we're just working on that
We're working on that. We have to test it. And I got people like my like Reza, who's working on this stuff to see what we can do, what we can't do, and how we can monitor it. Ideally, it would be something like some other series, and even in F1, I think they did this, where you just get the ECU by random.
Okay.
So because all the cars are the same, you just
You would put a tune in the car, or maybe you would go just stay and you would say, hey, this could be anybody, good luck.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, it's hard. It's like because tunes are also, to me, very very dependent on each vehicle, right? Like even though you maybe use the same engine, same car, every car has its own little nuance.
A little bit different,
So sometimes you can get a little more out of it, sometimes you can't.
Right.
And a lot of that has to do with the tuner. So there's a lot of things there. If you even, do a base map load on tune, like you might pick up a little bit, but it's an NA car. So you're not going to get...
You're not going to get a lot.
Right, but every little bit in a spec series is a big deal.
But we will have a horsepower cap.
Okay.
And the horsepower cap will be low enough to make sure that you don't actually have to rebuild an engine or anything like
that.
The idea is that, you can pick up a 200,000-mile engine and you'll still be able to win.
Now, do you think it's one of those series where, the only way you're going to be able to do it is, you can do whatever you want, but you're restricted by horsepower or something like that? Or is it going to be one of those things you have to dyno your car before the event kind of thing? I mean,
No, because we have data acquisition in the cars.
Okay.
So that really tells us the whole story.
I guess so,
for the most part.
Yeah.
It's just whether or not... Now, that gives you in the ballpark. So if the guy... Yeah, if the guy has, five more horsepower, you can't catch him.
Right.
But you could tell the guy's obviously cheating.
It's been interesting. I've been seeing, even some of, I don't want to say spec racing. It's not the right term.
Yeah.
But, some of the road racing, what they're starting to do is they're basically making it so, here's the thing. We're not going to restrict you on power or whatever, but you can't make more than this amount of power.
Yeah.
And then they dyno the cars before they go out, which I think is extreme, but I also understand
it
makes a lot of sense, right? So, I've seen them. They do the way, the dyno, they basically say, hey, this is the parameters. You have to fall between here or else, penalty, ballast, whatever they're going to do.
Well, the it's a little bit of a pain, but then the other side, if you don't do that, is what we did in the old days, which was take the cars apart, take the head apart, and measure everything.
I'd rather not do that.
You don't want to do that.
No, you don't want to do that.
Yes.
So the idea here really is to develop a competitive racing series that utilizes an affordable car.
Mm-hmm.
I like the word affordable. Cheap is
it's a relative term.
Right. An affordable car with affordable parts. Allow you to be able to kind of bring in some customization but drawing the line.
Yes.
And trying to keep this spacing. So what do you think about this series in its whole, right? This E90-ish series. Right. What do you envision, from the time somebody paid? Let's put the fixed thing on a car. Let's say we could find a car for $3,000.
Okay.
What do you envision a total program cost to get this car turnkey to race?
About $20,000, $25,000 at the most, if you want to make it look really pretty.
Okay. So, but there's no monetary cap on what you can spend.
No.
This is just, it's the parts you kind of have to be within the way.
Yeah, if you want a good gold-plated steering wheel on it, yes, you could do that. But
Right, but don't put it in there. What about safety equipment?
That's standard NASA stuff.
Okay.
So, but we do have auto power is providing the cages.
Okay.
You don't have to run the auto power cage.
Right.
But
it has to be of same spec kind of thing.
Same spec, which is the NASA spec.
Right.
But it's the cheapest way to go. It's a good quality cage.
Yeah.
And it's also affordable. So you put it in. They send it to you pre-cut, pre-bent.
Right.
All you have to do is just weld it in.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting. There's been a couple of companies that I know that have done a lot of that cage work where they're basically giving you a schematic. It's all bent. It's all really well fit. And it's basically here's how you basically line this thing up so you can tack into place and then get it welded, right?
Yeah.
And so seeing this stuff, you've kind of done all that legwork to source those parts, get all this stuff worked out, get the relationships worked out to make these parts affordable for this class.
Correct.
And that's what you're kind of finalizing.
And
about
it makes
now.
It easier for the guy. Like, we have a guy right now building a car, and he's never done this before. So it's really easy
Good
for
point.
Him because he just says, like, look, what do I do? And we tell him, look, this is what you do. Fix. Here's the stuff you need to fix on BMW Unities, because, like, you need to fix these oil leaks, and you need to fix the cooling system here and stuff like this. You run this radiator, you run this thing, you won't overheat, and you run this spring, and basically you put it in. So then you just fine-tune it, set your alignments, and you're close.
So now, before you decided that this was kind of the car you're going to narrow in on, did you guys compete or test with one of these cars to kind of try to find some of those hit-or-miss spots, things that we were going to have to improve on, or things we were going to have to give them some guidance on?
Yeah, so the whole reason this thing started, and it's not our series, you know, the series, somebody else's idea.
Right.
But they said, came to me and said, hey, like, we've been running these cars just as street cars, and they're so much fun, they're so affordable, and I thought, you know what, they're right. And my wife has an E90 at home, that's her daily driver, and it's a fun car to drive when the check engine is not lying on.
right. know, and that's one of those things.
Yeah, but I thought, yeah, that's great. So then we did some testing on the track just as a street car, and great car, fast, reliable.
So the one thing that sticks out to me with using stock ECUs is kind of what you just said before, check engine light. I would say German cars are so well known for entering into some sort of catastrophic limp mode. So if a guy's out on track, and obviously we're doing things to make sure stock engine, different things like that, but in the race, in the use of a race car, in the use of pushing a car to its limits, the odds that maybe you can have an issue that would trigger a check engine light or cause an OBD2 test mode to trigger or something, does that become a concern at all?
Not really.
You think it's not
no,
really?
No, the cars have been good. The only thing you get is if the car is kind of old, but the good thing is we know what the problems are. Mm-hmm. So the plugs and coils need to be replaced every so often.
Right.
So change those and you'll be fine. And then there is the smaller stuff, like the smog stuff, like the EVAP issues like that, which you don't need in a race car. So, that part's good. They're solid cars after that.
And so with some of the other spec series you see kind of coming up, I see a lot of stuff that's happening with BMW right now for sure. Again, I mean, Mustangs have always been in the picture, but I think it's the first time I'm starting to see, like, more modern-day Mustangs get used in a spec class. Do you see any other vehicles that are kind of starting to become, or is this something that people may, you know, you think people might keep their eye on that you can see becoming spec-type cars that would be really good?
Yeah, no, because they've tried all this through the years. They've tried everything, right? I've seen 350Z spec, and they had a Ford Focus spec.
Those are tough cars. I have a 350Z, and I would say that, like, it definitely takes, like, to me, don't roast me out there, but, like, I equate it a little bit to the Porsche-type stuff, right? Uh-huh. Like, Porsches are great cars to drive, and they really can make such a visceral driving experience just unbelievable, right? But there is a little nuance between some of the snap oversteer they maybe tend to have, and it takes a guy that wants to race that car. I wouldn't inherently say there's anything the fastest about it or anything great about it, whereas the BMWs, I think, are really good balanced chassis to start with. But, like, I think about some of these cars, even maybe they're newer, like, you know, some of these, the GT86s and, you know, GR86s and stuff like that. Like, we're starting to see a lot of people equate them to Miatas in the sense that, you know, it doesn't make enough of a power that you can't drive the car flat out.
Yeah.
You know, it is rear wheel drive. It does have a little bit of a shorter wheelbase. It's a little bit more balanced. I always wonder, like, are these the cars that may
They have a series for the things, but it's an expensive series.
Well, because the cars are brand new, right?
Yeah.
But there's, again, it's with that series, there's not too much you can do. You can't waver too far off the path,
right? No, it's very strict.
Yeah.
But the cars are tight, very tight. Right. Competition is hard.
Right.
But,
like, I wonder if, like, maybe some of these platforms. I'm always thinking, like, what's the next platform that's going to become some of these affordable cars as they age?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, 13, 14, 15, FRSs that were started.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny because, like, I feel like I can see multiple on Facebook Marketplace with blown engines for, like, $2,500.
Right.
But they're definitely cars.
Yeah, but no, that would be the next ideal car, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're affordable, they're easy to work on.
Right.
They're new enough, but not too new where you can't even touch it.
Right.
Yeah, because it's either that or electric cars. So.
Well, right. We don't joke about stuff like that on the podcast. But
they could be a lot of fun to drive.
No. I know. But, you know, I was... So, I think I was at Button Willow. And, I heard, a lot of tire screeching. And I remember thinking, what the hell is that?
Uh-huh.
And they're like, oh, it's a Tesla 3 club. You know, they're up there. And I walked up the hill and they're... And there they are racing around. I mean, no noise, just tire screeching. And it's
struggling
a little bit.
But, you know, when you have 500-600 horsepower and it could be a lot of fun.
No, I guess.
As long as you
can charge the cars in between.
Well, part of the problem is, we had a guy who had a Tesla Model S.
Okay.
And he wanted to run it in USCCC.
All right.
And I'm all for running electrics and sustainability and all that kind of stuff.
Just like being able to put out the fire kind of thing?
Well, yeah, because it's the future, whether we like it or not, right? It's coming. So you can fight it or you can embrace it.
Right. Fair.
But he did some testing with it, and, you know, the thing had over 800 horsepower or something, and it was 15 seconds faster than our touring cars.
Right.
At Laguna Seca, which is a lot.
It's a lot.
Screaming fast.
Yeah.
But then he says, oh, how long are the races? And I go, oh, half hour, 45 minutes. And he says, oh, yeah, I can only do this for two, three laps.
Right.
And I go, oh, then what? He goes, oh, then all of a sudden he becomes 20 seconds slower than our cars. So I go, oh, well, you better get a really good head start because we're going to be coming for you.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine how, the series starts great for the first three laps, and it's every car becomes... that doesn't seem appealing to me whatsoever. And then you only have to have, a 24-hour break in between in between heats there so that you can charge both cars.
Well, the trick would be you have, a multi-car team and you kind of pile up on purpose so you have a full course yellow.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's pretty wild. So, so now, this series, you guys are going to cater. Where is it going to cater to geographically?
We're doing this on the West Coast.
Okay.
There's a similar series, which is kind of going to be our sister series in Florida.
Based. Okay.
And so they actually have about 5 or 6 cars over there. It's called Spec, E90 Spec, I believe. E9X Spec.
Okay.
Hopefully we can have, they can grow and we can grow at the same time, and then we can expand, and it would be really cool to do something in the middle, we can have an East-West Championship in Coda or something like that, because we kind of want to do that. The same thing with U.S. Touring Car is we have an East Coast Series and a West Coast Series, and once they grow big enough, then we can have a shootout in the middle.
Let's say I got a group of 5-10 people, and we decide we want to do this kind of series. Is this one of those things where we can contact you, contact NASA? Could somebody theoretically form their own version of this series in a different geographic location? And
sure,
really, I guess they would just have to find racetracks that they can go to kind of thing?
No, definitely. Actually, we have some people in the Northwest, we've been talking to, and they're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll grow into that area because there's a lot of people that are hungry for racing over there. And we can do that.
Yeah, I think the idea of a lot of these classes is really good because first, if you get somebody that's not familiar with that particular chassis, you're kind of giving them a lot of the legwork already to, this is what you should run. We're taking the fear out of, what do I do for the build?
Right.
And then you're giving them kind of a place where, I hate to say it because it's not, but as a car person, you know what I never have a finish line.
Uh-huh.
Like when I'm building something, I feel like the finish line is so infinite, so far away that I just keep doing stuff until it's just absolutely torturous to myself and to my wall.
Yeah. Yes.
But with this, you're at least giving them a finish line. You're saying, hey, this is where it is.
We're kind of in a gray finish line, but yes.
Okay, I'll give you
always,
the gray.
There's always more tuning. You can always squeeze more power out of it.
That's more fair.
More speed out of it.
So let me ask you a question. Do you limit them on aero and stuff like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I really wanted to have rear wings on the car.
Yeah.
I think they look cool and they really help make the car more stable, all that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, good wings are really expensive.
Okay.
And that should not fit the spirit of the series.
But what if we use it with dangerous sheets of rigged with aluminum and we just rivet it together and hope it stays together? What do you think?
No. We talked about just putting an eBay wing on it or something like that.
Here's your eBay spec wing.
Yeah.
So now, is there something What are you going to do in the front? Are they going to let their front splitters?
You can make a splitter, and there's okay. going to be dimensional limits, but we can have a splitter.
What about under tray stuff?
The factory car comes with an under tray stuff.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It comes with nice plastic that's all bolted in. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Well, that works. Yeah. So, all right. So that's the limit there. It's going to be interesting to see. I think these spec series are a really good thing for racing because I think they also help elevate and kind of keep some of the older cars in a relevant scene.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see you start your series, your portion of the series, mm-hmm. And then how, like, I wish there was more like of an effort, a conglomerate effort to be able to get other people in G Group to really like, hey, let's do this. Let's get this thing involved. Yeah, that would really be interesting and, you know, especially with platforms that are becoming affordable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Expansions. No, because we have, so we kind of do stuff like to get people involved from a, like a no experience level, right?
Yeah.
So we have the NASA HPD program. Right. We do our own drive track time where you just, you know, similar to HPD where you just bring your street car and you drive. And you can drive beginner, intermediate, advanced, and you can kind of work your way up. And yeah, once you get good, then if you bring your car. So we've had people like that where they bring their car and they go, wow, okay, I'm getting too fast for my street car. I got to get a track car,
right?
And then they start building a track car and get their license and go racing.
So I'm going to go real layman, but to kind of conclude this podcast thingy, right? If I'm a person that maybe, and I know it's going to sound a little strange, but I'm trying to consider a modern aspect to it. Let's say I'm a guy, I'm a kid, I'm a younger adult that has found love for simulator racing, right? And I really like it, and now I maybe not even a car person.
Okay.
But I love racing, right?
Simulated racing,
okay. Right? Like I've put together a simulator, but I've used this, and I really feel like I'm getting better. I understand kind of the concept of race and different things, and I want to go race in real life.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not a car guy. Yeah. I don't know what I'm doing. So a spec series obviously is pretty appealing for the sake that we're kind of giving you a little bit more of a roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
What is the way that they need to get started? And because I know we just talked about what it's like to build a car and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if they've never raced on track, there's some checklist things that they have to do before they can be qualified to drive these types of series. So where would I start from no experience to something?
Okay. Well, this is one of a lot of people already do in USCCC.
Right.
Is you can, and we're going to have this as a big option in the E90 Cup Series.
Okay.
Where you can either build your own car. You can rent, you can buy the chassis with a cage and just bolt on your stuff on it.
Okay.
Or you can rent a car.
Okay.
So you can just, if you prefer to just spend the money, which actually in a lot of cases it becomes cheaper because if you don't have a truck, if you don't have a trailer, if you live in an apartment, you don't have a place to work on it, you just show up, you drive the car, and you already get a good team, you get an engineer with it, you get the crew chief, the crew with it, and you just drive the car and...
But what do they have to do from a learning aspect? Like I can't come out without ever having driven on track physically.
You start an HPD program.
All right. So the first thing people should be looking to do is get signed up for your local HPD.
Correct.
And so with HPD, like you can find all that information on NASA's website.
Yeah, NASA has regions everywhere.
Correct. Yeah. So once they complete this program, are they then set to be able to come into a series like this?
Yeah,
that's it.
Because all you need is a NASA license.
Okay.
So once you get your NASA license, you can race.
Wow.
Anywhere in the U.S.
What does it take and what does it cost and what are the HPD programs look like as far as length and how many times, different things like that?
So that's kind of like if you wanted to get your airplane license.
Yeah.
You know, it really depends on the person.
Okay.
I've seen some people who are really talented. And I can tell, like, if I'm riding with the guy in the street.
Right. You know if he's proficient behind the wheel.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If you can feel, have a communication with the car and you feel what the car is doing, then for you, you can do it in the weekend.
Yeah.
Others, you go, okay, you need more work.
So it's skill set based.
Yeah,
so in other words, I have an instructor. I mean, look, I know some of this, but I'm asking for some people that don't, right?
Yeah.
So like, it's a skill based thing. So I'm going to basically get an instructor beside me.
Yeah.
He's going to take me out on the track, maybe give me some keys of here's what you're looking to do, and then progressively get them faster and faster to the point where he can see that they have competent skill level to be on a track.
Right. Well, the way the NASA licensing works, you do practice on your own in HPD.
Okay.
And if you want an instructor, you can have an instructor. Sometimes you don't. You can just drive your own.
Yeah.
It's just like the street licensing program. Once you get good enough that you want to race, you take the test.
Okay.
And that's where somebody rides with you and says, yes, you're ready, or no, you're not ready.
Okay.
And then you go racing.
What kind of costs are generally involved with an HPD program and like each event that you may run? And then kind of what does it cost to get that test done?
It really depends on the region and the track and all those things. The more the lesser known tracks are cheaper. If you go in the middle of the week, it's cheaper. But if you want to run at Coda on a Saturday, good luck. Bring a big garage wallet.
All right,
Typically, like in the NorCal area, if you want to run like at Sonoma or Thunder Hill or someplace like that, you pay maybe $300-ish per day, something like that.
And if you have enough skill, you might run a day and realize, all right, I'm competent enough that I feel like I want to take this test. And then you schedule a test maybe for next weekend or whatever.
Yeah.
And so what does that test cost, roughly?
Same thing. But
you're basically paying for the day.
Yes.
Except
you take the test on the same day.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. And then if the instructor feels, hey, you measured up to what I believe is a safe, you know, person to be able to be behind the wheel of this car and navigate it through the track. Now I'm allowed to come into your series and maybe start to race.
Right.
Now, when they do that HPD test, they're not wheel to wheel. They're not with other cars, right?
No, you are.
You are really?
You are. No, it's not a race. You're an HPD. Stuff.
I understand, but you're still with other cars on track.
Correct. Which is really important.
With the HPD, do they ever give you? I'm sure there's some classroom, right? At some point.
Yeah.
Do they ever give you some kind of? Here's kind of the rules of the track, right? Here's the things. This is how you safely pass somebody. This is what you should do. If you come up to this, don't do this.
Right.
They give you a lot of that in the instruction.
Right.
So when they leave there, they're I don't want to say proficient, but they're pretty well equipped to at least start their journey on trying to become faster.
Yeah. So the criteria usually is not how fast you are. It's how safe you are.
Right.
So they can be slow, but as long as they're aware and they're not, like, sweating when there's somebody in their rearview mirror, then, you know, okay, this guy's going to be good and it's going to be safe.
Right.
A lot of times, like, I've done this thing where I've been an instructor sitting on the side watching the guy, and I'm thinking, okay, the guy's pretty good, but then I see, like, as soon as the guy's on his butt, he makes a mistake and he goes off the track or something like that. It's like, okay, dude, you're not ready.
Right.
But if you're if you're safe, then you're fine. It doesn't really you'll get the speed with time. Okay. You just need to practice with that.
So I'll ask one last question. So like if let's say you're just starting out. You've kind of finished your HPDE. You've done your tests. You now whatever. The question is, if you don't have a series that you're thinking about and you want to get into a spec series, is there a spec series that you think in your mind from all the cars you've driven over the years that you feel like this would be a great place to start and build skill with?
Ooh, well,
I know it's a tough question because there's a lot of nuances.
There's a lot of different. It really depends, I guess, on what you're into and what you like.
Yeah.
There's certain cars that I like and there's certain cars I don't like, so I wouldn't want to drive those things.
Right.
For a lot of people, the answer is Spec Miata, because there's great racing wherever you go. It's tight, but then the car's not for everyone.
Right.
And if you want to be fast, they're not easy to drive. If you want to be in the middle of the pack, it's not too bad. But if you want to win, you have to be really good.
Well, right, because the car is such a equalizer amongst everybody.
Yeah, and it's hard to drive it on the edge.
Yeah.
So that part's right. So it really depends, but I don't know. It's tough. The best one would be something, one of these expensive GT3, GT4 jobs.
Right.
Those would be really cool.
Yeah.
If you can write the check.
All right.
But that's a whole different story.
I really hope one day I can write the check. I mean, these cars are sick.
Yeah.
I mean, you look, it's an A90 Supra.
Yeah.
Look inside the cockpit.
It's not.
I understand.
It looks like it.
Look inside the cockpit, and you will realize you're in another realm of reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
TCR cars are another option if you have the money. Because the nice thing is used TCR cars are extremely cheap. You can buy a used TCR car for $50,000. Whereas people spend $100,000 building an E46.
Right.
For a super...
That's true.
Yeah.
It's true, yeah.
It's like, why would you do that when you can buy a factory-built car ready to go?
You know, I think a lot of that time just comes from a level of naiveness, right? Like, I think about... I don't think that's a word, but regardless, the point is, like, I think about how many years it took me of building my own cars before I said, you know what, it's okay if I keep the AC.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay if maybe I don't take the power steering out of things. But, like, you start out a build, I think you look at it like, I could build this for way less
than
just buying this big dollar ticket. And you nickel and dime yourself into oblivion.
Yeah. If you were going to build a TCR car in your garage, it would cost you $200,000 equally. But you can buy and use one for $50,000.
Right.
And it's great. Yeah. Now, yes, certain parts are expensive because it's got carbon fiber panels and all those kind of things, but it's not. It's going to be reliable. It's going to be fun. But a lot of people don't like it because it's front-wheel drive.
Yeah, I get it.
And they get like, I don't want to drive front-wheel drive.
Yeah.
But It's a great car.
A lot of options. I appreciate you kind of stopping your day with us.
This is so much fun.
Well, there is and there isn't. It's cool. I think
not for you. You're here all the time.
Right. No. I'm on the thing where I like the idea of the show, but the actual chain to a booth thing is. Yeah. I think I'm over it.
Yeah.
But I do like the car nature. I mean, look, we could be selling paper for a living and be at some convention, PaperCon or something.
Do they have a thing?
I don't think so, but if anybody's about to start a PaperCon, I believe that I get points on
you
it.
You get the idea, yeah.
So, all right, well, thanks for coming out
and hanging
out with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, listen.
Thank you for all your support.
Well, I'm excited, and we're going to follow along with kind of this Specky 90 class that you're building and kind of throw some stuff on the website when we get there just to kind of shine light on a platform that I believe is a really good platform to start with.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the cars will have Koenig wheels on them.
Yeah,
and,
there we go.
And yeah, they'll look good and they'll be fast, hopefully.
That's awesome. All right, well, thanks, Ali.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching. We'll catch you in the next one.